We're holding on page Memches in Shabbos Oisayim. So the subject of the perek we said was started with talking about the malachus of building, but most of the perek talks about the malachus of writing and erasing on Shabbos. So at the end, there seems to be a connection. You know, we know from Sefer Yetzirah where it talks about that letters of the Aleph Beis are compared to stones. You have the expression shnei avonim bonus shnei batim, that with two stones you can build two houses, just as with two letters you can make two different words, and three can make six, and four letters can make 24, etc. So maybe that's the reason why Dafka, the halachos about writing and erasing on Shabbos and the Agadta, but the letters is Dafka and Perek Abonim. Anyway, the end of the Perek talks about, now we know to be chayav, the minimum malacha for writing on Shabbos is if a person writes two letters. So what about the Mishnah talks about? What about if a person writes a letter as an abbreviation? So he writes a letter and a tick over it to represent, whether it's supposed to represent a number or an entire word or whatever, would it be chayiv or not? And the Mishnah mentions machlokas about whether he'd be chayiv or not. The halacha is that he's not. So in this, that kind of thing, abbreviations like that are called in Gemara terminology, nutrikon. In English you have the word notary. It comes from a Greek or a Latin root that means a writer. So just because scribes, writers would do that kind of thing, they would abbreviate things a lot. Anyway, so Amar Rav Yehuda or Yochanan, Mishum Rav Yosi ben Zimra, minayin the loshen nutrikon min haTorah. Where do we see in the Torah the concept of nutrikon? This concept of that you have abbreviations in the Torah. So Shanema, he was one example. Hashem says to Avraham, "Ki av hamoin goyim nesaticha." Hashem says, "I'm renaming you from Avram to Avraham because I'm making you a father of a multitude of nations." So now the point is, Marashah says, "Why does it have to say the word hamoin?" It could say avla goyim nesaticha. So it's once we have the word hamoin in there, which seems to be extra, then the Gemara is doubting it, and therefore the word av the Gemara is going to doubt it. So the Gemara is going to doubt that the two words av hamoin are actually meant as an abbreviation for six qualities of Avram. The Maharal makes a point, since the whole world was created in the schus of Avraham, you know, it says Eila Tolda Sashmaim Baritz Bihi Borom, and Bihi Borom is the same letters as Ba'Avraham. So there, and there are six directions, up, down, right, left, front, and back. Therefore, there have to be six qualities of Avraham. So that stands for the Aleph stands for Av Nesaticha L'Umos, I made you a father to all the other, to all the nations, as in fact the pasuk says over there. Vayisal Av Amoin Goyim. The Beis stands for Bochur Nesaticha L'Umos, I made you the chosen one among all the nations. Which you have, Marsha points out, you have psukim for each one of these. For the Beis, you have Asher B'charta V'Avram, that we say every day in Davening. Hamoin, the hey stands for Choviv Nesaticha B'Omos. Again, as we often have, Chazal interchange a hey and a ches when it comes to Drashas. So it means that I made you the beloved one among the nations. And we see that the Pasuk calls, Hashem calls Avraham, Avraham Oyhavi, Avraham who loved me. So we see that he was Choviv. The mem stands for Melech Nesaticha B'Omos. I made you a king among the nations, as we find that the Bnei Ches tell him, Nesia L'Kimata B'Seichenu. The Vav stands for Vosik Nesaticha B'Omos. I made you a Vosik among the nations. Now, Maharsha points out the word Vosik has several meanings. It means a person who's Onav and a person who loves mitzvahs. So by Avraham, we find both of those qualities. He was certainly an Onav. You see that he said on himself, Vanuchi Ofer Ve'efer. He loved mitzvahs because we have Hashem himself testifies in him, Ki Yedaiti V'mana She'etzaveh. I know him and I love him because he'll tell his children to keep mitzvahs. Also, Maharsha points out another thing we know about the Vosikin, we had many times about it in Masechta Brachos, is they were careful to daven as early as possible, to daven by Netzach Hama, connected with today's Shloshim Prachim of Rambam, and we find Avraham Avinu did that as well, by Yashkim Avraham Baboker. So therefore, all the possible meanings of Vosik we actually find in Avraham's behavior. And the last one, the nun stands for Neman Nasaticha L'Umos. I made you the reliable one, the faithful one. Thank you, the faithful one among the nations, as we find. So therefore, so those are the six qualities that Avraham had that are represented in the words Av Hamoin that Hashem said to him. So we see there's an example of Nutrikun in the Torah. Now that was Rabbi Yochanan saying in the name of Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yochanan Didei Amar. Then Rabbi Yochanan on his own says, here's another example, Anoichi, the first word of the Aseres HaDibros. Now it could have said Ani. And instead it says Anoichi. So we're meant to darshan it as a Nutrikun, Anon Nafshi Ksobis Yehovis. I myself wrote it and gave it, meaning that Hashem himself gave it written on the luchos. In many, there's any number of places. So here Rashi is explaining that it just means anon nafshi means I myself, and Marsho explains the same way. There are any number of places in Chassidus where it explains that it also means Hashem is saying I put myself into the Torah, and wrote it and gave it to you. Rabbanon Amri, the Rabbanon say instead of Rabbi Yochanan's Anon Nafshi Ksavas Yehovas, they say a different acronym. Amira Ne'ima Ksiva Yehiva, the pleasant words of Hashem, Ksiva, were written Yehiva and given. Why do they have a different drosha? Marsha explains, because after all, Rabbi Yochanan's drosha suggests that Hashem himself wrote on the luchos. That means, though, that to a certain extent, we're speaking of Hashem as a human being who writes. So the Chachamim didn't want to speak of Hashem in those terms. They want to talk as little about Hashem in Gashmiistika terms, and therefore they're saying Ksiva Yehiva. It's written and given as if, like, so to speak, it was written on its own rather than Hashem writing it, which would then make us think that Hashem has a physical finger or something. Ion Yaakov and talks about it, so and Anaf Yosef talk about similar points. Also, there are Midrashim that talk about as Hashem said each word of the Luchos, it was each word of the Aseres HaDibros, it was engraved on the Luchos. So is it that Hashem himself engraved it, or is it like it went there on its own? So that would reflect the two different drashas of Rabbi Yochanan versus Rabban. Ikadamri, and then others say another drasha, another Nutrikun you can find in the word Anoichi is the Mafreya. You do it backwards. Yehiva ksiva, it's written in, it's given in writing. Ne'emonin amoreha, its words are trustworthy. Now, what does that mean? Marsha says, the point is, like this, we have, there was the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, the whole Torah could have been given Baal Peh. It wasn't necessary to write any of it at all. The problem is, when you have something given over Baal Peh, then it's very easily altered. Whereas when you have it in writing, it's more fixed. So therefore, Hashem made sure to give at least a substantial portion of the Torah in writing so that it can't be altered. So that represents that Yehiva Ksiva, it was given in writing, Ne'emonin Amoreha, and therefore its statements are trustworthy. You can rely on that this is exactly what they are because they're written down for us. So there's another Nutrikun from the word Anoshi. Next, Dvei Rab Nosson Amri. In the yeshiva of Rab Nosson, they said another Jerusha, that where we see a Nutrikun in the Torah. The Malach says to Bilam when the donkey keeps on lying down and going off the path and whatever, and Bilam has beaten it several times. So the Malach tells him, why'd you do that? The fact is, the donkey had a good reason to do that. Ki yorat haderech benegu. He says, because the road was yorat towards me. Now, the simple meaning of yorat, Rashi explains over there, means something along the lines of like you were in a rush to go on a road that's opposed to what I, speaking in Hashem's name, would want, because Hashem doesn't want you to go to curse the Jewish people, and you're thinking you're going to do it anyway, so therefore I was sent to stop you. But Marsha says the thing with that is, after all, Udiyu, you have a few psukim Udiyu. Hashem tells him, you want to go with them, fine, kum leif itam. So why now would the Malach be saying that, on the other hand, you're hurrying to disobey Hashem? So therefore, that's what makes the Gemara instead darshan the word Yorat as a Nutrikun, which stands for Yora Rasa Notza. The animal, the donkey, was fearful. It saw me and it moved to the side. So in other words, don't be upset with it. It was doing that because it saw me standing there. The Maharal points out in Gur Aryeh on the Pasuk that the order is significant. First, the animal was afraid before it even saw the Malach, just that it instinctively, it felt something, there was something there to fear. Then it actually saw it, and then it went off the path. So therefore, it's in that order. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they gave another example of a Nutrikun in the Torah. When the Pasuk says that you have to bring the Korban HaOmer as Karmel, that stands for Karmole, a full pillow. So it means, in other words, it actually says like this: you have to bring the omer when the grain is as fresh as possible. So the grain, the individual grains, or the individual grains of barley are filling up their husks as much as possible. So karamole, like you have a full pillow. Rashi, when Marsha brings that elsewhere, Rashi explains that the word kar also means a place full of grain. So karamole also means you bring it from a bumper crop of grain. Whatever the case, that actually has relevance in halacha, because in fact that's the din. When you bring the omer, is supposed to be brought from fields as close as possible to your shalayim, so that it should be as fresh as possible when they prepare it to make the korban omer. Reb Achaba Yaakov Omar, here's another example of a netrikun in Tanakh. David HaMelech says at the end of his life, when he's giving his last instruction to Shlomo, he tells him, remember what Shimi ben Gera did to me. He says, that he cursed me kolam nimretzes, that he cursed me with literally the word nimretzes means a very strong claw. But the word nimretzes, first of all, is an unusual word in Tanakh in general. And second of all, Marsha and Eitz Yosef point out that the word you would expect to be nimrotza, which would be goes together with klala. It would be the feminine verb that would go with klala. Why nimretzes? So therefore, we understand that as a netrikun. It means that Shimi is cursing out David and yelling at him, noyefu. He's a noyef because he accused him with the whole thing of Bathsheba, and we learned earlier in the Masechta that he wasn't a noyef, but obviously Shimi wasn't holding by that. Mayavihu, he's claiming he's a Mayavi because his great grandmother was Rusa Mayavia. Reitz, in the Reish sense for Reitzeachu, he's a murderer in that story with Uriah, and maybe also there were others. There were other people. We find, for example, that Yoav killed Abner, and many people suspected that David had a hand in it, and David had to take tremendous steps to assure everybody that he didn't, that he had nothing to do with it, and Yoav did it all on his own. But nevertheless, he had people like Shimi who still suspected him of it. Bepashtos. The tzaddik stands for tzorohu, he's a troublemaker, and the tough stands for te'evohu, he's a disgusting person. So nimretza stands for those five accusations that Shimi was hurling against him. Why dafka te'eva? It's Yosef mentions an interesting point, brings from Kli Yoker on the pasuk, that we find Chazal say back when David had fought against Goyas, the pasuk makes a point of mentioning there that David was very handsome. He was very handsome and had yufei einayim, beautiful eyes. So the Medrash says over there that Goyas had intentions of Mishkav Zohar with him. So now Shimi is accusing David all these years later that Yutaka went along with that. So therefore he calls him Te'eva, because we know the Pasuk calls that kind of thing Te'eva. Anyway, so that's another example of a Netrikun. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, here's another example. After they find Yosef's cut in Binyamin's sack at the end of Parshas Miketz, and they're all on a tizzy. So Yehuda says, man daber uman stader. What can we say? How can we justify ourselves? Now, what do you mean, how could he justify ourselves? Right after that, Yehuda goes and gives a whole speech to Yosef and explains the justification for what's going on over here. So what do you mean, man nitzadak? Therefore, the Gemara is understanding that the word nitzadak is meant for a drosha. Also, another interesting explanation is Rashi makes a point on the pasuk over there that the word nitzadok is a reflexive form, meaning to make ourselves justified. Rashi explains at some length over there that usually there's such a form. You would have a nun and a suf, and then you'd have the three letters of the shoresh. But here, because the shoresh begins with a tzaddik, instead suf changes to a tes, and it goes between the letters of the shoresh. Anyway, the point is that a lot of times you find a number of times in Tanakh where a form like that is used when a person is pretending to do something. Misroshesh, for example, you have a pasuk in Mishle that refers to a person who pretends to be poor, but really he has a lot of wealth, and other examples like that. So if you're saying over here nitzadok, it sounds like Yehuda is saying we're pretending to be to be good, but we're not. They actually were good. They're innocent of the whole accusation. So therefore, the Gemara sees it as an atrikun. So he said that. So nun stands for nechoinim anachnu. We are honest, as in fact they had said to Yosef to begin with. Kainim anachnu, tzadikim anachnu. We're tzadikim. Tahorim anachnu. We're pure. Dakim anachnu. Dakim we had before, and then in the drasha on the letters of the aleph base is also a word for pure. And kedoshim anachnu, when we are holy. So therefore, in other words, you have no business accusing us. Why do they have to use all these different expressions? So Marshall explains that Yosef had mentioned to them all kinds of things, that he's hurling all kinds of accusations against them. The story with Tomer and the story with Reuven and Bila and killing Shechem and so on and so forth. So therefore, he's accusing them of many different things that they did in the past. And therefore, Yehuda is using in his Netzirkut many different ways of justifying themselves and saying, we're not guilty of those things and we're not guilty of this either.
Dach by itself, Dalet, it means pure.
Okay. It can mean pure. It can come from an Aramaic word dechei, which means pure. It can also mean humble. Like you have, it can also be humble. Like in Tilim, you have, for example, al yoshev dach nichlam. So it can also mean humble. So it can mean both. Dachim can mean humble as well as pure.
Of course, in Tehillim, we talk about who could come close to Hashem has pure hands. It's the same.
Yeah, but they use the word niki chafayim. That's a different word, but yeah. Okay. He was trying to do it. Of course, that's why. Of course, he was trying to get them to do tshuva. That's why he put them through all of this in the first place. But never, Yehuda obviously didn't know that at this point. He didn't know that this is Yosef, so therefore he has to justify.
Give them a ticket.
So yeah. Of course.
He didn't mean it bad.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. Ha'odig perek shloisha aser. So the beginning of the perek talks about the malachas having to do with weaving and sewing and tearing and things like that. So in the course of that, the Mishnah mentions that if a person tears his clothes for a mess on Shabbos, or he tears his clothes in his anger, then he would be potter. So the Gemara starts by discussing why, if he tears his clothes on Shabbos, would he be potter? On the face of it, he's been mekayim after all a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah, midrabanan, for a person to tear his clothes when a relative passes away, or the Gemara says also, even when if it's just an odom kosher, an er l'chayid, or if he was there at the time when the person passed away. So in this connection, the Gemara brings a piece about the importance of that even just an Adam Kosher, an Er L'Chayid passes away, that other people should feel sad for it. So Tanya, we learn in a Braisim, if named Ma Mason Bonu of Noisef Shal Adam Ketan Tanim, why is it that Rahman al-Atlan, a person, the young sons and daughters pass away, is Kadesh Yivka Vis Abel al Adam Kosher, in order that he should cry and mourn when an Adam Kosher, when an Er L'Chayid passes away. He says, what do you mean, Kadesh Yivka, in order that he should in the future? Arvona Shakli Mine, what are we taking? Is Hashem taking a mashkin from him in advance because later on he may do the wrong thing? Hashem doesn't do that. Hashem doesn't punish a person in advance. So what do you mean? Ella, you're right. What it means is, Mipnei Shalai Bocha V'Yisabal Adam Kosher, because in the past, this person failed to cry and to mourn for an Adam Kosher. So therefore, Hashem pays him back Mida Kenegan Mida. So therefore, Marsha explains the Mida Kenegan Mida is his children were also Kshedim. They don't have Averis of their own after all. If they pass away, it's because of their fathers, it's because of their parents' Averis. So now, therefore, so he ends up going through the same kind of thing. The different Mephoshim over here talk about different points over here. Iyun Yaakov points out, earlier in the second parak of Amasechta, we had a long sugya where the Gemara pointed out different reasons why a person's children might die young, Rachman Litzlan, because of failure to keep the mitzvah mezuzah, or Talmud Torah, or different other things that we had over there. So why all of a sudden is the Gemara giving a different reason over here? So he says that, first of all, there we could talk about in general, when you find in general that children die young, is because people are careless with these averas. So you were asking about a specific person, and the answer would be what it's saying in the Gemara over here. Also, he says, there you could talk about only some of a person's children pass away, Rahman al-Tzlan, here we're talking about all of them. So therefore, there has to be something more severe than just, let's say, that he was careless with mezuzah or tefillin or whatever mitzvahs the Gemara mentioned over there. And then there's different other points. The Rif makes a point there that if, for example, that if it hadn't been for this that we're talking about over here, that he failed to mourn for an Adam Kosher, fine, he would have been guilty of those Averis, but Hashem could have paid him back in other ways. With Yisurim, for example, Hashem didn't necessarily have to take away his children. But because on top of that, there's this, then therefore Hashem does that. And the Gemara continues, Shekol Aboicho Misabal Al Adam Kosher, because when a person cries and mourns for an Adam Kosher, for an Er L'Chayid who passed away, then Hashem forgives him for all of his averus because of the covered that he did to this other yid. The point being, in other words, Marshall says that now Hashem forgives his other averus, so that way, in other words, he doesn't have to. His averus should be cleaned up by having his children die, because now his averus have been forgiven. And the point is, my show also says that we're talking about, this is why we say we're an Adam Kosher. If it was a Talmud Chacham, forget about the kavod that you do for him. There has to be the kavod for the Torah. So here we're talking about the guy wasn't such a Talmud Chacham, but he was an Er L'Chayid, and therefore that's reason enough that you have to show him respect. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara ends up saying that the case in the Mishnah that's talking about when a person is potter on Shabbos for tearing Kriya would be where he wasn't required up Yalacha. So it wasn't a relative, wasn't his Rebbe, wasn't an Adam Kosher, he wasn't there at the time of the Tzias Neshama, he's stamped tearing for no reason, so therefore he's potter on Shabbos. Then the Gemara goes to deal with what it says in the Mishnah, that if a person tears his clothes in his anger, then he's potter. So the Gemara asks on that. How b'chlal, so and the Gemara mentions the point that when a person does that, it helps calm down his Yetzirah. So therefore, in a certain sense, it can be considered a constructive act. The Gemara brings a b'raisa over there that says that he would be chayev, and so it talks about that in some cases it can be a constructive act. But the question is it really, how could it ever be constructive? Tanya, Rav Shimon Alaza Oyma Mishim Chilfa Ba'agra Sha'omim Mishim Rav Yechanan Ben Gurya or Nuri. When a person rips his clothing in his anger, or he breaks his utensils, his dishes, or whatever, when he's angry, or he scatters around his coins, his money, when he's angry. All of these kinds of things. You should treat it, you should consider such a person as if he worshipped Avodah Zarah. Because that's the craft of the Yetzirah. He never starts by getting a person to do serious averus right away. Today he tells a person do this, some seemingly minor avera. And the next day he tells him to do a more serious avera. Until eventually he comes to the point where he can tell the person, go worship Avodah Zarah, and the guy goes and does it. So therefore, when he starts out, in other words, with this, that he's ripping his clothes and so forth, which is, so to speak, a minor avera of Baal Tashchis, but that can be the gateway to much more serious averas. In addition, the Alter Rebbe talks about the Negeres HaKodesh, the idea that Kol HaKodesh, B'chlal, the Gemara over here, it's interesting, the Gemara not here and nowhere else does it ever use the expression where you have the popular expression Kol HaKodesh Kilo Oved Avodah Zarah. The Gemara or the Midrashim or Divrei Chazal never actually use that phrasing. You have what it says over here, that a person rips the clothing and whatever is kilo ovid avodah zarah. The Rambam seems to have been the first one who coined the phrase kol hakoyos kilo ovid avodah zarah. And that became the popular expression that everybody knows. And the Alter Rebbe explains in Negeres Chofei the idea behind it, because a person has to realize that everything in the world is run by the Eivishter, and therefore when he gets angry at another person who harmed him, then it's tantamount to thinking that Hashem is not running things at that point. Anyway. So the point is, so the Gemara is saying there's two different ways of explaining what the Gemara's question is. One way is that the Gemara is asking, so how can you tell me that it's a constructive thing when we see over here that Adrabah it's considered destructive because it's following his Yetzirah. And another explanation, the Magid Mishnah says on the Rambam, the question is, why isn't the Braisa seems to be implying, the Mishnah seems to be implying that if a person does it on Shabbos, he's chayev, but implying that during the week, there's not a problem with it. But if it's kilo over Avodah Zarah, then it's equally also during the week as well, so it should say so. Why does it mention three things, tearing clothing and breaking dishes and scattering money, the Chidah says of art, because each one of them, as you would think, is less serious than the other. Tearing his clothing, which is the actual clothing on his body, is something very serious. Breaking dishes, which is not something on his body, is, as you would think, is something lesser. And scattering money, at least, you know, all you have to do is pick it up again after it's scattered. And nevertheless, the Gemara is saying each one of them is a problem. Anyway, Omer of Oven Maikra, where's a pasuk where we see this point, that a person has to be careful with even the littlest part of his Yetzirah. The pasuk says, "Lo yibachok kelzar." There should not be within you a foreign god. And you shouldn't bow down. There shouldn't be within you a strange god, and you shouldn't bow down to a foreign god. So, what do you mean, "bacha"? Ezehu kelzar sheyesh begufei shel adam. What strange god does a person have within him? Heveyem is a Yetzirah. That would be the Yetzirah. And therefore, the Pasuk is saying that if a person follows the Kael Zer and allows it to remain within him, eventually he may come to bow down to Kael Necher. The way to avoid bowing to Kael Necher is to get rid of that Kael Zer within you. So therefore, we see that you can't give it, and you can't even give it an inch. Anyway, so the question again is, so how is this person, how are we saying that this person is, that this person ripping his clothes is considered something constructive, or how are we saying that can be? Yeah, but not on the contrary, he's appeasing his Yetzirah with that, meaning, in other words, that he's strengthening his Yetzirah for this, is the question. So the answer is, the E of, what?
It does.
Yeah, so the Gemara answers, the E of it, the Mirma, Emesa, in Shibesis Shori. The answer is, that if he's doing it just in order to put fear into the members of his household, then it's allowed. The Rambam discusses this in Hilchos Deis. It was in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam recently. It'll be in Perek Echad in a few days. That the Rambam describes, a person has to be careful not to get angry, and even if he has to display anger in his household, he still has to not actually be angry inside, but just put on a show on the outside in order to make them to make them realize that they did something very wrong or whatever it is. Kihod Rabbi Yehuda Sholif Matzvi Yosef. As we have an example, Rabbi Yehuda, when he needed to show his household, the members of his household, that he's angry, he would pull out the hem of the garment, the hem or the bordering around the garment, which is very easy to repair afterwards. It's not like if you rip the garment where then you have a rip in there that's very difficult to fix. He was just pulling out the hem stitching or the border stitching or whatever. It's very easy to redo afterwards. So that kind of thing is allowed then. Rab Acha bar Yaakov Tova Moni Tviri, Rab Acha bar Yaakov, for the same purpose, would break kalim that were already broken. So it wasn't obvious that they were already broken. So as far as everybody knew, he's breaking actual whole kalim, but in reality, they were already broken, and therefore it was allowed. Rav Sheshes Romelev Amse Munini Aresha, Rav Sheshes, when he was angry at his maidservant, would pour the juice of little fish over her head. So again, you know, you're talking about something embarrassing or whatever, but all she has to do afterwards is take a shower and it's gone. Rab Abba Mitbar Tavar Nachtma, and Rab Abba would break the lid of a barrel where, again, the lid wasn't really necessary. So all of these are examples of where they would break something that's not really needed, and they were doing it only in order to display to their members of their household that they're angry, so they should know not to do the same thing in the future, but they weren't actually getting angry, and therefore that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. That's not giving into the Yetzer Hara, that's not giving into the Kael Zer, because they're not truly getting angry, they're just putting on a show, and they're using something which is already broken.
So in these cases, in other words, they needed something that was stronger than just talking the Shem to the Shem.
Apparently the idea was they needed something stronger than just words, Yeah, that's the point. In other words, letting off steam is what we said before. That could be a problem. Here we're talking about fakir. It was that the people in the household should realize something very wrong was done over here. We should never do it again. But the Alter Rebbe makes a point in Hilchos Shmiras Guf B'Nefesh, I think it is, or whichever halachas deal with the dinim of Baal Tashlis, that you have in general in halacha, even though we have a dinim of Baal Tashlis, when the gain that's being gotten from the destruction is greater than the value of a thing, then it's allowed. So in these examples, even, for example, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, even if the kalim were whole, it might have been legitimate for him to break them, because what he's accomplishing by getting his household to realize to never do this again might be worth more than the value of the kalim, but he didn't want to use that heter necessarily, therefore he's using ones that in fact already broken anyway, it just wasn't obvious to them.
Yeah. Get the point across.
Yeah. Getting back to the Gemara continues talk, the Gemara returns now to the topic of Kriya. We just said before that a person has to tear Kriya for an Adam Kosher, or when he was there by Tzias Neshama, or various other things. In the course of that discussion, the Gemara had also mentioned, which wasn't brought over here in Ein Yaakov, that particularly when a Talmid Chacham passes away, then everybody has to tear Kriya and Prava Avelis for him. Well, we're not talking about on Shabbos. We just mean, in other words, there is a concept that people have to do. Not on Shabbos. Shabbos, in general, there's no Avelis. I mean, Bechlal, a number of these dinim we have, we're not noyag in all of them nowadays to the same extent. I mean, you know, if we tore Kriya every time an Adam Kosher passed away, we'd be walking around with ripped clothes all the time. Even a Chocham, for example, only if it was one's Rabbi Muvhak or something, does a person tear Kriya. For example, all of us tore Kriya Gimel Tammuz, but, for example, let's say Rabbi Marlar passed away, I don't know anybody outside of his family who tore Kriya, and similarly with other Rabbanim and great Chassidim and whatever, similarly with Rabbi Gerari, etc. Anyway, So Omer Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Mishum bar Kapara, Kolam Murid Dmois al Odom Kosher, a person who sheds tears when an Adam Kosher, when an Erlich Yid passes away, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sofron Umanichon Beveis Gnozer. Hashem counts those tears and puts them in his treasury. So the point is, in other words, Maharsha says, why does Hashem count them and put them in his treasury? Because this is an aspect of Yiras Shemayim. A And the Gemara tells us in Brachas that Hashem's treasury contains Yiras Shemayim in it, because that's, so to speak, the only thing that Hashem can't get himself, that he relies on us, because HaKol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Miyiras Shemayim. So now this crying for an Adam Kosher is part of that, and therefore Hashem puts it in his base Gnazer. Other than that, Maharshal says, the point is that a person, other than that, what does a person have a business crying for? So therefore, it has to be that we're talking about those kinds of tears. Why are we saying Dafka that Hashem counts them? So the Rif explains, we just said before, that a person, if he doesn't do that, Rahman al-Tzlan, he might end up shedding tears over his own children. So now instead Hashem counts them, as in he counts them towards his chosim, that now it's not necessary to do that. And Hashem also will use them eventually, he says, to be mechaya mesim. It'll be part of the tel, become part of the tal shel tchiyah. There's a number of different explanations also. Among them are that Hashem counts them in the sense, when a person is crying over an adam kosher, not always are all the tears that he's shedding only because of that person. He might at the same time be also thinking of his own troubles or his own mortality or who knows what else. So Hashem has to, so to speak, count them and distinguish between the ones that are for the adam kosher versus the ones that are for other side things.
You just can't all of a sudden press a button and start crying for somebody who's an adam
kosher. Right.
You know, right. You feel it or you don't.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Shenemar, as the pasuk says, David HaMelech says on himself, Noidi Safarta, Hashem, you have counted my noid. Now the word noid has a couple of meanings. It can mean a skin bag, like you use for wine or water or whatever. But Rashi explains that here the Gemara is darshaning it, Meloshin Noid, as in Lonud Loi, like we find by Eov's friends, that they came to commiserate with him and to prav Avelos with him. So David is saying, you've counted my Avelos. Ata Simodim Nodi Sefauta Otto is actually how the passage goes. You have counted my Nodi. Simodim Osi Binaidecha, place my tears in your Noid, where here the word Noid does mean like a skin container, a container where you store liquids. Haloi Basifra Secha, aren't they in your book, where the word Sifra Secha is also Meloshin Safar, as in counting. So we see from that pasuk that David is saying the tears that I cried Lonud to commiserate with, and when an Adam Kosher passed away, and to commiserate with him and his family, Hashem, you will place them in your noid to store them away, like a person stores liquids, and you'll count them. Haloi b'sifra secha. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. If a person is lazy and doesn't bother doing a proper hesped for a chacham who passed away, he deserves to be buried alive. Why is that? Why such a punishment? Maharsha says it's midah keneged midah. When he's treating the fact that the chacham passed away, he's treating it lightly. It means, in effect, he's saying the guy's not really dead. So therefore, what do I need to prav avelos for him for? Well, in that case, Hashem says, then the person himself, when he's alive, he deserves to be buried alive, just like he's saying about the chacham, that in effect he's being buried alive because he's not truly dead, because if he was dead, then I would miss him. And again, there are a variety of different other explanations of why it is why dafka that punishment. And Af Yosef brings an idea that a person is Mas'atzel Vespoide. He says he's thinking to himself that I'm greater than him. I don't need him to be Mechapel for me, because he's not the greatest of the generation I am. So he deserves to be buried alive, because then Hashem's Shekhinah goes away from him, and all that's left is Nefesh Bahamas. And Yun Yaakov talks about more about it, that he thinks that maybe there's Ein Tchias HaMesim in HaTorah, and therefore he deserves to be buried alive, like the dirt on Midburn, and there's many different other explanations. Anyway, Shenema, we find by Yoshua. So when Yoshua passed away, the pasuk says, "Vayikbar Oseh B'Gvul Nachalosei," they buried him in his territory. We find in earlier in Sefer Yoshua that there was a specific city that they had given him as his portion in Eretz Yisrael, B'Simnas Serach Asher B'Har Ephraim, in the city of Timnas Serach, that was his city that he had gotten as his Yerusha in Eretz Yisrael, which is in Har Ephraim, Mitzfoin Lahar Goash, north of Har Goash. Now the question is, Har Ephraim, we know from many places, it's mentioned in many places in Nach. It was a mountainous area, a hilly area in the center of Eretz Yisrael, in the territory of Ephraim. What's Har Goash? We never find anywhere else in the Psukim, other than that here at the end of Yoshua, and also these Psukim are repeated early in Sefer Shoftim, that it mentions this place, Har Goash. So what's the point of mentioning that this place was north of Har Goash if you never know from any other pasuk where Har Goash is anyway? Therefore, it's meant as a drasha, malamet shegoash, or shiroga, shalein, ahor lahorgon. This means that the mountain was trembling, or gosh would mean like it was erupting against them to kill them. So in other words, they deserve to be buried alive by the eruption from the mountain. In modern Hebrew, in fact, har gash means a volcano. So it means, in other words, that the mountain was quaking and threatening to bury them, or erupting and threatening to bury them for the fact that they didn't do a hesped. And the point is that we taka don't find when Yoshua, now when Moshe passed away, we find by Yufkoso Bnei Yisrael Shlosh, they mourned for him for 30 days. By Yoshua, you don't find any such thing. That is why the Gemara is saying that evidently they didn't take the trouble to give him a proper hesped. And therefore, we're saying it's for how gosh, therefore they were going to be punished with this how gosh. What? In Lubavitch, they don't do a spade because there's the issue we talked about it in Masechta Brachos, that if you exaggerate on what's said in the hesped, then it's not so good for the neshama of the mess. So therefore, we don't do a hesped by the levaya, but afterwards, you know, you have at the end of the shiva, people gather together and they tell over things about the nifter and at the shloshim, etc. You know, so that way we yotze the hesped that way. But we don't mean specifically the hesped necessarily has to be speeches. Anyway, the point is just that people should feel sad and then realize that it's a signal to them to do trouble. The Rif explains over here that that's why also the Pasuk mentions the word mitzvoin lahagosh. The word tzvoin is related to the word sofun. So like they were hiding themselves rather than coming to Yoshua's hespin. There's an interesting quote from the Chassam Sofer that says, why Dafka was that? Why Dafka is the mountain quaking and threatening to bury them is because by Matan Torah we had before Kof Alem Haukigigis, and what was one explanation we talked about there, Tosafos mentions that they had been willing to accept Torah Shebichsav but not Torah Shebaalpeh, so the mountain was suspended over them to force them to accept Torah Shebaalpeh. Now what did Yoshua mainly give Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai Masorah LeYoshua? Where Yoshua, what he accomplished for the Jewish people, although a large part of what he accomplished is transmitting Torah Shebaalpeh to us. So if they didn't do the hesped for him, it shows they don't consider Torah Shebaalpeh very important. So therefore, they deserve to be buried under the mountain like they would have been by Matan Torah if they hadn't accepted Torah Shebaalpeh. Vote from the Chassam Sofer. Anyway, we see, in other words, that we see that when a person is misatzel by spedish or chacham, then that's it. Why taka were they misatzel? So in Yalkut, actually on the pasuk, it says because everybody was busy with their fields and whatnot. Everybody, you know, they were already settled in Eretz Yisrael at that point. They'd already done kibush for chiluk 14 years earlier. So everybody was busy running there with their own lives, and they didn't bother coming. Some of the Mephoshim also say that you have, in particular, the Gemara is going to mention now over here, the Skenim, who were still alive from Moshe's times, and they lived throughout Yoshua's tenure. Yoshua led the Jewish people for 28 years, so there was still, when he passed away, there were plenty of people who still remembered Moshe, and they knew, as the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, that Moshe's face shone like the sun, and Yoshua's only like the moon. So like they looked down on Yoshua, and they didn't consider him as they didn't consider him to be of a caliber of Moshe, and therefore they didn't think it's that important to make a hesped for him.
What's the exact
title of Misatzel? Misatzel means lazy.
Huh?
He's lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah. He has better things to do, basically. So the Gemara continues, Amr Abchiba Abba Amr Bechnan, call him Misatzel by a spade of Shochacham. A person is lazy about the hesped of a Chacham. Ain't a marich yomim, then he doesn't end up living long. Midah keneged midah. It's again, as an example of midah keneged midah. He wasn't sad, Rashi says, over the fact that the Chacham passed away earlier than you would have expected. Therefore, therefore Hashem isn't concerned about his life as well. Shenema, as we find in the pasuk, b'sasa b'shalcha terivena. B'sasa is short for sa'ah b'sah. So Hashem pays back with a saw in return for a saw. Midah keneged midah. B'shalcha, when it's time to send away a nation, when it's time for them to be destroyed, terivena, then Hashem fights against them and destroys them, and they're gone. The Gemara brings this in Sota, and then the idea is there we learn the concept that Hashem punishes Midah Keneged Midah, and Hashem also rewards Midah Keneged Midah. So here we're saying this is an example of that. So the Gemara says, Eisved Abchiya Ba'abal Rabbi Yechanan. So how can you tell me that because people are not careful with the hesped of a chacham, therefore they die young? What about the pasuk says, "Vayavdu amas Hashem kol yemei Yoshua"? The people served Hashem throughout all the time of Yoshua. V'chol yemei haskenim asher harichu yamim acher Yoshua, and all the time of the skenim who lived for a long time after Yoshua. So it sounds like those skenim did live a long time after him. So what are you telling me that their years were shortened? Amalei, so Rabbi Yechanan answers him, Bavloi, you from Bavel, because Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba was originally from Bavel, you should realize, you have to understand the pasuk properly. Yomim ha'erichu, shonim lo ha'erichu. They had long days, but they didn't have long years. Meaning, so Rashi explains, they didn't live that much longer after Yeshua. But the time that they lived after Yeshua, they lived comfortable, pleasant lives. It just wasn't as long as it would have been expected to. Maharsha actually learns the other way around. He says, Fakir, they lived a long time, but they didn't have an easy time of it. So it's as if they were sick, they had other problems, and therefore it's considered as though they had already passed away. In fact, you have, by the way, Rashi on the Psukim in Sefer Shoftim explains over there. He gives the Seder of the years over there, and it comes out that those Skedim in fact passed away shortly after Yeshua, and right after that you have Kushan Rishasayim and Asniyom and Knaz and so forth. So it comes out more like what Rashi is saying, that they didn't live very long. On the other hand, Seder Olam says that they lived altogether 17 years after Yeshua, and only then begins Kushan Rishasayim and the rest of that. So that might fit better with Maharsha's understanding that they did in fact live many more years, but they weren't good. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, Chaf Gimel Ir. We have the Pasuk Shiva Sheftaich Kvarishonu V'Yatzaich Kvartchila. Hashem says, I'll restore your judges like originally and your advisors like they were at the beginning. So now in our time, you have the concept of Shoftim V'Shoftim. So you have the Shoftim are to assist the Shoftim. If the Shofet, the judge, can't accomplish things in practice, then you need the Shoftim who beat people with sticks and with whips and whatever is necessary to force them to accept it. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to the Geula, Mitzvah Shleima, it only says, doesn't say anything about Shoftim, because the whole concept of Ra and the Yetzirah will be gone. You won't need Shoftim to force the people to listen to the Shoftim, because everybody then will automatically follow them on their own. Okay, halacha, continuing on halachas of things that a person sees. If a person had, Hashem did a nest for him beyond Teva. So then when he sees the place where the nest happened, then he says the bracha sha'osali nest v'makam hazeh. His son and his grandson also say it, and the Alter Rebbe add, not only them, but ad sof kol hadoros, even ones who were born before the nest would also make the bracha. So the son makes the bracha sha'osali nest la'avi v'makam hazeh, or if there are a bunch of them together, la'avinu, the grandson would say la'avoisai, and if there's a bunch of them together, they would say la'avoisenu. The Alter Rebbe actually doesn't make that distinction, he just says la'avinu. If a person had many nisim happen to him in different places, then when each place he says the bracha, he has to mention all the other ones. He says a bracha, sha'asali nes b'makam hazeh, and in makam ploni, in the same way his children would mention all the other places, although the Alter Rebbe disagrees with that and says they don't. They just have to mention the one place.